pumped up?
Yeah, much as I got coffee going.
Ooh.
And it's 7 at night. I'm going to be up for
it. We record at night. I'm drinking coffee.
I got to keep myself energized, so I'm sober. Yeah.
Usually you go the kombucha route. What's changed?
I have a kombucha too.
Oh.
That's a ritual at this point. Remember, I was doing soda for a bit. I was like, I can't do so. I'm too old to drink soda. So I have kombucha and then coffee to keep me up.
Oh, man. What do you get? What are the big plans tonight?
I'm probably going to watch TV and feel guilty about not reading.
That's
how that's going to go. I won't even watch TV. I'll just flip around. Get all this stuck. Not quite in the mood. Blah, blah, blah. You know.
We'll talk about this later, but one of my favorite pastimes is adding movies and shows to my Netflix queue. Knowing full well, I will probably never watch these. I'm like, oh,
yeah. It's probably a perfectly good movie. I'll do the thing, or I'll start like 5 minutes up and be like, I'm not quite in the mood for this.
I am exactly that way.
Yeah. We're spoiled. Generation.
I know. When we were kids, we would get once a year a free weekend of HBO. And I remember we had a tape, like a VHS tape thing, and we would just record movies, even if we didn't think we were like they were good. We just recorded movies.
Oh, yeah.
HBO, if you're listening, that's a statute of limitations or over on that.
Well, I remember I really wanted, I mean, it was like 11 or 12 or something, and you know, for my birthday,
a VHS player.
And I would say, no, we had a VHS player, but we didn't have cable growing up.
Okay.
So it was a treat to go to like my grandma's house that had Nickelodeon. And get a watch those. So people who are all nostalgic about Ren and Stimpy, and Doug and stuff, I'm like, not up to date on that stuff. But I really wanted Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Ooh, yeah.
And you know, so my aunt one year gave me, she bootlegged it from her cable on the VHS. Yeah. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves and the Mighty Ducks. VHS, and that was a pretty big get.
Woo, pretty good. That's a double bill. Do you think you deserve that gift?
Yeah. Okay. A good gift. One of the best gifts I've ever gotten.
I know. I can't even. Pretty good. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it didn't even have the first like 10 minutes of Robin and Prince of Thieves.
Don't even need it.
Yeah.
Don't need it. You know the story. It's classic. You had an intro. I kind of derailed it.
It's fine.
I think this intro is pretty good.
Bootlegging cable. Who wants to say which aunt so the real one doesn't get in trouble?
Oh.
Right. It's a couple of different suspects.
The FBI is going to bring us down.
Yeah.
Or we should just give people VHS and be like, you know what? It's like olden times. You know how people like do olden times stuff to like, you know.
I have a VHS.
Cleanse the soul. Yeah, you know, maybe they do woodworking or they bake bread or something like that.
Yeah, artisanal.
Yeah, artisanal, something like that. What about artisanally videotaping movies? How about that?
That sounds creepy. I have an artisanal VHS player, like for real.
Oh, really?
In the storage space under the stairs.
That's freaky.
I insist on lugging it around with me.
I know, it's pretty.
I was like, why do you have that? It's like, you never know.
Hey, you never know. When does it have DVD capabilities or is it just VHS?
No.
Just VHS.
Old school, just VHS.
I'm going to make a bet that doesn't work.
I don't know. I'll try plugging. I mean, we still have electricity. You just plug it in.
No, but...
It won't hook up to the TV?
The inner parts might not work.
It used to work.
My next question is, when you would go to old Blockbuster, rest in peace, Blockbuster, did you rewind your movies? There was a fine or something like that. They probably didn't check that. You think they checked that?
Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes they catch it or not. I used to work at a library, and I imagine the parallels are somewhat similar. Like at the library, you bring the bin in, you know, you have the return slot, there's a big old bin, you bring it in, and before we open, you'd like kind of thumb through the books, open the DVDs and the CDs to make sure they're actually there and all that. Okay. I bet the Blockbuster people did the same thing. They have their little bin, they take the cassette out of its case and check, so.
And you would always go like hey, what's in, what did you just get returned? And they're like, oh, it's a new Ren and Stimpy season. And you're like, yes.
I never got into them.
Yeah, we have some overseas listeners. If you're not familiar, Blockbuster. Was that global? Blockbuster Global? It would rent movies, VHS, and eventually DVD. And then it went out of business because Netflix took over. So yeah, that's all you need to know about that. But yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So on that note, let's start the episode. Welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and Blockbuster. I'm Peter, joined as always by Matt. The king of kombucha and coffee. We got a little different episode tonight. We don't have a specific book that we are talking about. We got some books that each of us have been either reading or listening to outside the podcast. So we're kind of cheating on the podcast. I got some recommendations to give to the listener, one fiction, one nonfiction. And then on the second half of the episode, we each have five books that we're adding to our TBR. I told Matt this idea and I came up with a title. It's called TBR Show and Tell. I don't know if he liked it. He didn't even reply to it, but that's TBR Show and Tell. You get the content.
I said it sounds good.
Yeah, but I wish you didn't use any exclamation marks or anything. It's just like, all right, man.
Yeah, I meant the idea sounds good. The title.
TBR Show and Tell.
Mm-hmm.
I came up with that at like 7 in the morning at work. Come on.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I know. It's a little backstory.
You never used my titles. I wanted to call that one episode, Then What Were You, Bill? You didn't do it. You called it something else.
Yeah, I know. I just trying to keep it uniformed. Our first couple episodes were kind of funny, goofy titles, and then I kind of kept it, you know.
I'm sorry. No, it's good. You can be the title guy.
Yeah, anyway.
Just don't expect me to use emojis.
Anyway, let me start. I've been going to the library quite often.
Good for you.
Year. I have a lofty goal, reading goal, to fit into my busy life. But I picked up a couple newer books, or within the last couple of years. Talk about one. Short story collection by an author, Hilma Wolitzer. The book is called Today a Woman Went Mad in the Supermarket. And it's kind of interesting. I did not know this author. I realize now her daughter is Meg Wolitzer. I don't know if that name rings
a bell. I've heard of her, yeah.
I have heard of her. Hilma Wolitzer is still alive, I believe. I don't believe she's like 92. And this is a collection bringing together, I don't know, like a dozen of her stories. What's interesting is the last story is 2020. And some of the first ones are from the 1960s. And it kind of progresses, not exactly chronologically, but sort of generally speaking. And you kind of, she doesn't really change as an author. But it is kind of interesting to see a collection like it's not a big, massive book. It's probably like 200 some pages. So it's a smaller book. The other thing, and I like this when short story writers do this, is a lot of the stories are connected. Let me rephrase that. A lot of the stories are like marital issues or a woman looking at her life and being disappointed, or it's kind of it has some dark humor. It's pathos, ethos, whatever the one you want to choose. Anyway, it looks at this two couple, and the stories are written many years apart. So this is obviously like two characters that she was invested in. And then the last story is them 2020 pandemic sort of thing.
Okay. How'd you pull that off? Is that all right?
That I would say is not a rousing success.
Yeah.
I haven't found anything that tackles like the immediate now very like, I don't know, really well. There's always some like parts I don't like, or I flat out hate it. This had good parts and bad parts. It's just a little weird to have like references, a lot of references when most of the other stories don't. They're kind of
they're
a little bit timeless in a way. But overall, a very if you like a little bit of a sharp critical eye at sort of people in relationships and marriage and people's fears, and it's kind of sad but funny in some ways, but I would recommend it to fans of short stories. I want to say
very literary.
It is a little literary, but it's not. I would say it's one of those things, and I kind of like this sometimes, where it's a kind of work where it won't be universally praised, because there's some. I think she, kind of looking at her like Goodreads page, most of her books are not like highly rated, but I think it's maybe an acquired or like a personal taste that if you like her, you're gonna really like her. And I would kind of side that I would definitely read more stories by her. I rated it 4 stars on Goodreads. So if you're at the library, you see this collection, I would pick it up.
Yeah. It's, and that's pretty good for you. You're pretty stingy with your Goodreads.
I am. I'm a little, I never really go below 3 unless I really don't like a book.
And you rarely go above, you rarely do 5. Like, we'll talk and you'll be like, I really love this book. It was great. And I'll look at your Goodreads and you have 4.
Let me see what I gave this next book, because I believe this is a 5-star book, but I could be wrong. This was either 4 or 4.5. I wish they could do halves. I wish Goodreads would, I don't know why they don't do that. This is a 5-star read. Okay. So the next one. This was a history book released, I believe, in 2020. And it's called Inga's War by Savannah O'Donnell.
Inga's,
I-N-G. Inga.
Oh, and then, okay.
Inga's War. And this is the author talking about her grandmother, Inga. And it's sort of her story as a young woman in Eastern Prussia at the outbreak of World War II. Okay. And it does all the basic stuff of like telling her story and all the travails of that. But what I thought was most interesting about the story was she uncovers some like uncomfortable truths. And then she's also, the author's aware that like she might find out stuff about her family, maybe being tied to, you know, maybe she finds someone, an uncle or a family friend who's tied to, you know, the Nazi party or something like that. So she's like, wants to uncover the story, and then how she kind of weaves that together with the actual telling of her grandma's story. It's very affecting. It's very powerful. It's moving. And it has a question kind of at the end of it is, as she's like uncovering stuff, it's like, what is the price of uncovering this stuff? And she's obviously like opening wounds for her grandmother in a way that has this like very interesting dynamic of telling a story, but while also her grandmother is alive for most of the book.
Okay.
And she is like, her experiences are very traumatic. And like, how much do you push to like find out a family member's past, basically?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
That makes sense.
How important is it versus how much do you want to hurt this person?
Yeah. That's one of the questions. Like, how important is this that I find out, you know? And she was, there's some very traumatic things that happened to her. I don't want to spoil it.
If you press to find out of your curiosity, you can wind up hurting. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it sort of affects the whole family as they find stuff. And it's like, sometimes, you know, you kind of want to be like comforting to the person, like, you know, I understand or whatever. But at the other side is like, you can't really understand this like very traumatic stuff. She has very traumatic things happen to her. And it's really well done. It's well written. I like the aspect that the author is like kind of self-critical in her, like she wants to tell the story of her grandmother, but she's also aware that like, you know, what my role in this story might not actually be beneficial.
Yeah.
In a way to like her grandmother and her family. But I would say that's a high recommend for fans of kind of like the smaller personal histories of like World War II or any sort of histories like that. And it asked some interesting questions about kind of the impact of looking back into a family's traumatic history. Yeah. So I don't know. I would say I'd recommend both to you, to be honest with you. Okay. Anyway, so those are two outside the podcast books I recently read, and highly, highly recommend the Inga's War, and I recommend the Wolitzer short story collection. So, Matt, you've been listening to some audiobooks, and you have some, you told me, like, random bookish thoughts, correct?
Extras. Yeah.
Pluses.
Yeah.
Dive into them.
Yeah. I like to listen to audiobooks in my car when I'm driving around and whatnot.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this before, but you've always been a big fan of the audiobooks.
Yeah. Yeah. I like them.
Okay.
I like them.
I'm not judging you. I'm just saying that's, you know,
no
dynamic between us. You're the audio, you know, a lot more about the audio world, tips, tricks. If you don't like the author, don't go through it. Like,
I mean, it's like not reader. Really. It's it. I mean, you put a CD into the CD player or
trying to give you more
on the Audible app. There's not a lot of tricks to it.
You told me once, like, what did you tell me? You said something to the effect of, if it's not like someone you like
the narrator, is key.
The narrator is key.
Yeah. If they don't have a good voice, they're annoying. It's a lot of people. It's harder reading books to my little kid. Mm-hmm. It's actually, I kind of, your brain goes ahead of your mouth, and I realize, like, oh man, it's, you know, I got to back up and be like, oh, I kind of botched that. So reading a whole big book is actually, I think, is way more of an accomplishment and way harder to make it compelling and engaging than you'd normally think. Reading out loud, knowing which voices to do, you know, I imagine you got to have like highlighters and stuff. So
it's almost, I would think it benefits from going through it a couple times before you, like, getting it right the first time is probably impossible, right?
Well, yeah, and then if that's your job, you got to read the same book a couple times to prepare to read 500 page thing out loud.
Were you a good, like, public reader in grade school? Did you have to do that?
It was all right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was
wasn't terrible. Good.
That's probably terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. I remember some nerves.
Yeah, you got, yeah. Nice. Hey, it happens. We're all
right.
So anyway, no, I got some good tidbits for the audio corner. I actually finished a while ago. I thought we were gonna do this is before we got sidetracked, but Dan Jones is a British historian. He had a book called War of the Roses, which I finished a little bit ago. And I was kind of saving it because you had his new book on the British, whatever his new book was.
Yeah.
And I thought if you were going to finish that, we'd do a British history Dan Jones episode. But it kind of fell.
I let you down. That's my first Dan Jones.
He's fun. He's a good.
It's newest one. He's very engaged. He's very, I think, saying like he's popular or poppy or whatever, I don't think that does him service. But what that is he can engage maybe just like an amateur historian, like just someone who's like, just kind of give me the facts and keep it entertaining. And I'm not, this isn't my like passion or like career or anything like that. He kind of meets you at that level, right?
Yeah. Academic types call it pop history, kind of pejoratively.
Yeah.
But it's fun, it's engaging, it's not dry.
I was learning stuff. There's too much other stuff we're reading right now. I couldn't. I will pick that book back up.
So. If you do, we could do a little British history.
So there's I have a question. War of the Roses.
Hmm.
This is a, I don't know much, but is this a war between families? Is this right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it wasn't officially the White Rose versus the Red Rose at the time. That wasn't quite how it went. It was basically a bunch of different noble families fighting for the throne.
Okay.
And somebody would get it, and then there'd be a little alliance of other families trying to prop up their guy, try to make them the king. And so it wasn't quite as black and white as white versus red. White versus red came later, like historians and novelists. That was an easier.
I was going to ask you, did it sort of get easier to understand. Like, did the historians or people after the fact try to make it a little bit more sense of what was going on after the fact?
Yeah, yeah. That the War of the Roses, that term and those symbols fighting each other came after the fact. It's okay. Basically the protracted civil war with people. Yeah, it was cool.
When was this?
1400s.
Okay.
Started about the time of Joan of Arc and Henry VI.
Okay.
Then I think Henry VII, Henry VIII, the young Henry VIII came on at the tail end, but he didn't quite get to Elizabeth.
Okay.
I'm only like vaguely familiar with that. But it's the type of stuff like Shakespeare did a lot of plays about that era.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good, but good reader.
That's good. I finished that a while ago.
Okay. All right.
I got SPQR by Mary Beard.
Ooh.
On audio. I got
someone who I read her book 12 Caesars and loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good too. I'm not finished. I literally have six or seven CD audiobook cases on the floor of my passenger side of my car, and I just kind of, you know, rotate them. Oh, this is the big one. I should have led with this.
Okay.
I have the Sally Rooney, The Big Beautiful World, Where'd You Go?
That one
on audio.
You didn't tell me this.
I know. Because I was going to try to finish it and then spring it on you. But guess what?
Yeah.
I don't hate it. It's all right. I kind of am liking it.
Beautiful World, Where Are You?
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
I read that book last year. Okay. Yeah.
We'll see. I got to finish it. But the narrator's good. It's a lady with this, like, a slight Irish accent.
Why I say that's weird is because when I talked about the book, yeah, I thought the first two thirds were terrible. And then the last third was like, okay, this is more, I could kind of see people enjoying it. So you might actually really like this book, because I thought the ending was better than the beginning.
I'm going to finish it and gather my thoughts, but so far there's multiple characters. She sketches them well. Some of the characters aren't likable, but honestly, a lot of people in our generation are like that. So I'm not going to hold it against the author that she's kind of sketching a portrait of how people are and they're not likable. Like, that's not her fault.
I'm curious.
You know,
now you got me curious about the audio version. Just if I was thinking, if like
it could be
listen to it, maybe. Is there multiple people reading the book?
No, it's just the one person. She's good though.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I gotta gather my thoughts. I have more notes, but here. I gotta finish it. And it might take me a while because I'm pretty ADD with it.
Yeah.
Like, I'll finish one disc and I'll be like, I'll switch books. And so as long as it's not on hold at the library, I'm like hoarding audiobooks on the floor of my car.
So I have a question for you. When you get these from the library, do you get the whole book or you just get one disc?
Oh, you get the whole book, Peter.
Okay. I didn't
know. That's such a naive question.
I was like, that's a crazy way to check do that.
A disc at a time. No, it's usually anywhere from 10 to 20, depending on how big the disc is.
The way you said it, you were like, never mind.
I'll listen to a disc and I'll switch it out because I have multiple.
Okay. Books. I was like, what? Okay.
There's another book. It was pretty big, I think, last year, 2 years ago, called The Only Good Indians by, I think, Stephen Graham Jones.
Oh, yeah, I think we've mentioned that.
Boulder. Teaches in Boulder.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm almost done with that.
Was that like a horror book
or not? Yeah, I thought it was a gritty mystery. And then some stuff started happening and I'm like, what is going on? So the thing with audiobooks, if you miss something or your mind wanders, you got to kind of go back. You can't go back and look like, okay, what are the characters' names?
Yeah.
So you're kind of just, unless you want to like back up on the tracks or mess with that, you're kind of got to try to catch up in your mind.
Yeah. That's
so, and I thought it was a mystery. The cover looks like a mystery. I thought it was going to be kind of a gritty
crime. It's got that like gear on the cover, right?
Yeah. I was going to be like crime.
Yeah.
You know, like a Dennis Lehane type gravelly Elroy type thing. And some weird stuff happened. I promise you it's better than I'm going to make it sound. It sounds like I'm going to be snarky, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Basically, these guys kind of get haunted by an elk
Okay.
And like the elk. I can understand
why you prefer.
And I'm just
that.
Like, okay, wait, what? And then it took like a supernatural turn. And then I looked up on Goodreads. It's a horror. People talking about this is really weird, but it was a horror book. I'm like, okay. So I got on board, and it's pretty good from that.
Gotcha. From yeah. that yeah. lens.
So I got to finish that. I got a book. I forget what it's called, but it's about virtual reality in okay. In the tech. What's the Oculus? The guy Palmer Luckey or Lucky Palmer? It's the guy who kind of gets credit for inventing this new wave of virtual reality technology. So from back in like 2014, it's like a true story of something about the future. It's halfway interesting. It reads like a GQ profile. It's like a puff piece for this guy, but it's
interesting.
Okay. Kind of interesting. Just
yeah. Is it sort of like this guy has figured out the way people are going to do stuff in the future, and isn't that just amazing?
No, because he figured out how to make virtual reality like kind of work.
Okay.
Like where you see the metaverse stuff like coming out now, and I think it looks stupid. Mm-hmm. But I guess even 10 years ago, the consensus was virtual reality would be cool, but it's impossible. And this like 19-year-old kid, a college dropout living in a RV in his parents', you know, driveway.
Yeah.
Figured out how to make everything sync up. Like it was a big problem trying to make your hands.
Oh,
you look right. down in the world, having your hands do stuff just to make it seem real. It's a lot yeah. of little stuff that you take for granted, having the wide periphery,
making yeah. your hands. That actually sounds kind of interesting.
It's sort of, it reads like a puff piece, okay. but it's interesting.
What I find interesting is like figuring out the solutions to like your brain just sort of processes things like in a certain way, and if it doesn't like match up with that expectation, I can imagine it being like very like unfulfilling virtual reality. Like, oh,
that was the problem.
This isn't like
recently.
Yeah. So I think solving that issue is what I find.
And the story as presented through this book, I mean, it sounds a little like PR manufactured,
okay.
but whatever. The story is this 19-year-old kid came out of nowhere, cracked the riddle, sold it to Silicon Valley. He's a billionaire now.
Okay.
All that stuff. But I don't know. I try to pick up something or other that I don't know anything about.
Okay. So that's your sort of left field.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Did you research that or did you just pick that up out of the wind?
I was like, oh, cool.
See, I am more of a planner with my library visits. You're more of a spur of the moment. Let me wander around the
library. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. Like I used to do at Blockbuster. I just grab. And I haven't seen, I've had that VR one for months. I just keep renewing it. And it's just, yeah. A lot of the times I wind up listening to sports talk radio, and I should be listening to books, but I just like, I get kind of. So it's just.
Hey. You know, we talk about sports, yes. You know, it's good.
Yeah.
But so you have what? 1, 2, you have 5 out? Do I have that
right? There's at least one more I'm blanking on.
Okay.
Yeah.
When
I finish them, I'll come back and I'll talk about them. Okay. Like especially the Rooney and the Mary Beard and all
I'm curious about Sally Rooney, where you end up mm-hmm. there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Mary Beard is someone who, as a non-Roman fan, she makes that really fascinating. And mm-hmm. I recommended 12 Caesars a few months ago, and I still recommend that.
Definitely. We're going to turn you into a Roman fan.
I might just be, I mean,
whatever that means.
Everything I read so far, you know, I, Claudius, really liked. 12 Caesars, really liked. So I might.
Why do you say you're not a Roman fan?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why I say that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You're a burgeoning Roman fan.
I'm a burgeoning Roman. I'm reading Dan Jones about the Middle Ages, and that's not really Roman times, but you know what I mean.
It's the aftermath of the Roman times.
Old times.
Yeah, we'll turn you into a history guy.
Yeah, I like history, but it's ancient stuff I've never gotten into.
Well, we'll get you into it.
Okay.
There's a little taste of the audio corner.
That's audio corner.
Incorporate those more into the show.
Presented by Matt, produced by Wesley the dog.
if we ever get sponsorship, it could be Audio Corner brought to you by
Budweiser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crest, Colgate, whatever, toothpaste. Some kombucha.
There you go. Kombucha. What's your brand of choice?
Whatever's cheap. Okay. Sprouts. Farmer's Market organic kombucha, orange, mango, turmeric.
That is a generic grocery store brand, but hey, we'll get some.
Cheap. I'm not going to spend that much money on it.
Okay. All right. I'm ready for your random thoughts in your brain.
Oh,
stuff,
yeah, yeah.
Stuff we didn't get to when I end the episode too soon and you go, hey, babe, I had this point, I had this point, and I had this point.
Or it doesn't flow together.
Okay.
There was one story of my brother's that I was going to steal, but that's going to be an opener in the next week or two.
Okay. I'll
push that open.
It's a little teaser. That's a teaser.
It's a good story. It's not mine. I heard it like third hand, but
I like it,
but that'll be for later. From Paper Lion. I like the guy from the beginning. There was a football executive or somebody who just said, congratulations to everybody. Like you're walking by somebody and say like, hey, congratulations.
That's
and Clinton asked him about it. And he's just like, yeah, I figure I make him feel a little better. I'll wonder like, oh, what was that? So I was thinking of stealing that.
Start but saying that to people?
Yeah, it could get you in trouble with.
Yes.
You know, if.
They're not.
If a certain woman might be in a certain type of way.
And oh, man, I gotcha. I read you. Maybe. I read the tea leaves. Congratulations.
Other than that, it'd be pretty funny.
Just say until, it to guys. Say it to guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Do you meet enough people during your day that you're saying you're meeting a lot of people saying congratulations?
No.
Okay.
He's like at the grocery store or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't get out that much.
Me neither.
But to the clerk, the grocery store, the library people. Hey, congratulations.
Hey, congratulations. I heard you guys, the union won. Good job.
Yeah. No, you don't say anything. You just like, congrats.
Oh, you don't say
anything. That. You don't say
congrats, wow, man. Appreciate it.
Congratulations. And they're like, oh. No, try it out. Try it out, but be careful. That's all I'm going to say.
Like, congratulations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something else I noticed from Paper Lion. The movie.
Okay.
And where else? I saw it somewhere else. Like an old YouTube clip I was watching. Plimpton went to play with the Baltimore Colts a couple years after the Lions. Oh, so the Paper Lion movie with Alan Alda and the YouTube, real life YouTube stuff. The referees in 1960s football had starter pistols, not whistles.
Stop it.
Pistols, and that's how you started a game.
What?
Yeah, for real. Yeah. So I want to bring those back.
Okay.
I'm assuming they're blanks, but that is cool. Like, for real, it was just like they didn't.
I would think, yeah, they would.
Yeah. Just, and they're just pointing them at the ground or up in the sky or whatever, but they just had little
pistols. Think of track and field days, what we had. I don't know.
All right. See, dude, I'm assuming they still kind of do it.
We were kids in the 90s. I feel like they might have.
I didn't do it in high school.
I was just doing this. I'm talking about like grade school.
Yeah.
And they might have had starter pistols, but I'm not
sure. Do you think the NFL should bring back starter pistols?
To start the
play
game?
Through the whistle, play through the gun blast.
The gunfire.
Wait for that.
So if there's like a – oh, false start. They would fire the gun. Is that what you're suggesting?
I think to start the play. I just noticed guns. And okay. At first, I kind of like with the Alan Alda movie, it didn't like quite dawn on me. It was like, oh, yeah.
You know what? People would
then stop. I'm like, wait, starter pistol. Like,
people would stop complaining to the refs. Game would move faster, probably. Guns.
Yeah, Bruce Arians or whoever's yelling at the ref, and they got to like, or you just start like kind of fiddling with it, twirling it on your finger.
Oh, like Doc Holliday. I like it.
It would allow the referees to be a little insouciant.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, oh, yeah.
They should also have change belts. I don't know why.
What? Change belts?
Like they would have just like, you know, how people like quarters and dimes and stuff.
That doesn't make sense. Why do they have to do that?
During the timeouts, they would just take a quarter out of their change belt and flip it to a kid in the stands and be like, someday this could be you, sonny. Just change out the whole vibe of the NFL.
That's ridiculous.
Okay.
The starter pistol idea is a good idea. Change belts. That's ridiculous.
How about you wear a change belt? You and I wear change belts.
And then tell people congratulations and toss them a quarter.
Yeah. What about that?
I don't like that idea. I don't know where
that might be an idea.
I don't like that.
Change belts.
I don't like it.
Okay.
Change belts.
I might look into it. Let's see if you can buy one off of Amazon. Change belts.
Okay.
I don't really have that much change, so boy. Just put like candy in there, maybe. I don't know. All right. You're looking at me like
I'm not crazy. On board.
I don't know. That was my brain just going off. I don't know. The candy belt. I don't know. Anyway. I've been circling it for a while.
It's a little, I don't know. See if you follow me on this.
I'm ready.
A little tenuous, but I.
Oh no.
I don't know. So hold on. Let me. So.
Back up.
It came up during the Super Bowl. It was the halftime show.
So I was watching.
It was a while ago. Mm-hmm. Elmore Leonard on Charlie Rose.
Okay.
They're on YouTube, right? Yep. And so Elmore Leonard was talking about how when he was a young aspiring writer, he really admired Hemingway, right? But then Leonard started saying like, "Yeah," but then I kind of realized he doesn't have a sense of humor. I don't really, you know, and like he kind of moved on from admiring Hemingway. And he's like, you know, it was good for who I was as a young person, but I kind of grew out of him. And I think that's true. A lot of people in that next generation, like Elmore Leonard was born in the 20s, I think Mailer, Gore Vidal, all those, that second wave of world writers who came out of World War II, admired Hemingway, but kind of saw him as that. Like he was very, he appealed to a certain masculine ideal. And Elmore Leonard's actually pretty funny, good sense of humor. I think a lot of people who kind of grew out of that, maybe grew out of Hemingway and realized,
I'm following you.
I was like, that's interesting. It's like, does our generation have somebody like that? Like the who kind of appealed to a certain type of masculinity for teenagers and men in their early 20s, who maybe now in your 30s, you're kind of realizing, oh, he wasn't all that funny.
Are you talking about writer or just anybody?
So you know who I think the equivalent is?
Who?
Eminem.
Eminem.
Appeals to a younger phase, you know, of your life. I listen to a couple of his songs that come on the radio, and it's like they're catchy. He's a good lyricist. He has a way with words, but they're kind of puerile. They're kind of, even like, he's funny, he's not clever, he's kind of, he'll make little noises and be kind of, I don't know, like the Clash Clown in Neighborhood. He's not like clever funny. I don't know. Something hit me when Eminem was on the halftime show, and there's a radio station in town that plays a lot of old rap.
Yeah.
I listen to instead of audiobooks a lot of the time. But it kind of came up, then that interview with Leonard stuck with me. I'm like, you know what? Eminem is the Hemingway of our generation, and not necessarily in a good way.
Your brain's got a lot of space in it. Like, you just got, that's, that. Well, I mean,
it's not change belt, but it's an idea.
It's not change belt, but it's not
as good as
reference. No, that's a change belt. I like
that
it.
That makes sense.
It's good. That's good to add to the random thoughts.
And I don't want to get in trouble with Eminem because he doesn't.
I was going to say like Jimmy Kimmel.
Well, Jimmy Kimmel's just not fun.
Jimmy Kimmel had a show back in the day.
No, this isn't a Patreon episode. Got to scale it back. Scale it back.
We can't criticize people?
We only criticize powerful people in the Patreon.
No, that's true. My point was really that all that interesting. I want to get to our TBR books. But that I like, you had some good thoughts there.
Eminem is Hemingway.
Because I've heard author-wise, there's a, I don't actually agree with this, but there's a group of people that think Cormac McCarthy, for instance, is just sort of a young man's like catnip, per se.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of came to mind. I don't agree with that, but there are
people. I'd have to revisit him. We should do Blood Meridian one of these times.
I have read that book. It's very.
But yeah. I was just thinking like kind of. Somebody who is very appealing to an 18-year-old's idea of what it means to be masculine or a man who maybe as you kind of grow up, you realize like,
yeah,
maybe not for me anymore. Not to devalue Hemingway or Mr. Mathers as an artist.
He's but, not you know, listening to this podcast. Just, okay.
We'll let it sit at that. And I'm curious what other people think about that. Because I think there's something there.
Are you ready for TBR show and tell?
Yeah.
Hey, that was good. I like that energy. All right. We're going to end on some new books. I haven't told Matt the books I have. I'm going to tell him about, and he hasn't told me his selection. So these are books for me are I'm curious to read. I'm interested. Maybe I'll get to them soon. Maybe I won't. But they're books I am bringing to you, Matt, and to our audience as this sounds good to you because they sound good to me. Let's read them. So do you want me to go first or do you want to go
first? Yeah, you go first.
Okay. Let me pull up my list here. My first book that I'm going to tell you about is a book that's, I don't think it's out yet, but it's coming out soon. And the book is called Black Cloud Rising by David Wright Fallad. And it is, let me read a little bit of the synopsis here for you. By the fall of 1863, Union forces had taken control of Tidewater, Virginia, and established a toehold in eastern North Carolina. Thousands of freed slaves and runaways flooded the Union lines, but Confederate irregulars still roamed the region. In December, the newly formed African Brigade, a unit of these former slaves, led by General Edward Augustus Wilde, set out from Portsmouth to hunt down the rebel guerrillas and extinguish the threat. So this is a historical fiction book. I've seen a lot of praise. Like a page turner, but an important story that's kind of forgotten, set during the Civil War. And I saw
that. That sounds incredible.
Does it?
That's right on my alley. I want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's, I think it's, let me see any other highlights from this. I think I just saw, where did I see this on? I actually saw it at, I see it at Barnes & Noble. Actually, I didn't tell you I went to Barnes & Noble. They have a good selection these days. I think I saw it online getting the praise. And I was like, let me look what this is about. And I was like, oh, this looks like a potential future book.
That sounds good. That's like right in my alley.
Yeah. Historical fiction, Civil War.
Guerrilla War.
Scottish kind of an untold story, maybe. Something we might not be familiar with. Like true characters that were not. I think that sounds really good. Black Cloud Rising.
Yeah.
So, first book.
Sounds good.
All right. Your first TBR.
We're going to do a one-on-one. All right.
Yeah. So,
well, I approach mine a little different.
Okay.
These are not new books. These are all oldish books.
That's okay.
I had sitting around my house, but they're all of them, like the ones I got the itch to read.
Okay.
So maybe I like it. Go off on my own, even though I really don't have the time, but to go off on my own and start them. They're all five. Ones I kind of want to get to.
I
don't know how to work any of them into the show, but I figure, you know what, that's how I'm going to
approach this. Is it good because you often buy books, you're like, I want to read this, but I don't know when, right? Yeah. I think most people have that urge. If you're a big bookish person, you buy books, you're like, I don't know when I'm going to get to this, and you oftentimes forget about the book. So yeah. I like this strategy of yours.
These are all old books, but I bought most of them halfway recently too.
Okay.
Anyway. So this next one, having said all that, this next one actually did start, and I think I'm going to finish just because it's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
It is it's by Gore Vidal. It's one of his earlier ones when he was like 24. It's his third or fourth book published when he's 24. It's called A Search for the King.
Okay.
And it... I don't even know how to describe it. At first, I didn't really even know what it was about. I'd heard the title because I was a fan of his, but I didn't really know the plot or anything. So I don't know why. I took it down. I started looking at it. It is about, it's based, there's a legend about a trabadour, which is like a singer guy from the Middle Ages with a lute, right? There's a legend that King Richard, who you might know from Robin Hood.
Yes.
He, when he was kind of kidnapped and held for ransom by the Austrians on his way back from the Crusades. A troubadour named Blondel, B-L-O-N-D-E-L, supposedly went on a search to find him. And I actually don't know too much more about it. But this is Vidal's take on that. I don't know. And I'm really liking it. I picked it up and read the first chapter, and it kind of hooked me. It's written really well, kind of. I don't know how to really describe it, but it's good. I like the idea. He sets the scene well. Like, it, Richard hasn't even been kidnapped yet. And historically, I actually don't know how that worked. You think of it like the King of England's coming back from the Crusades. For whatever reason, he doesn't have his army with him. And so he's almost got to sneak back from Greece up the border of, like, I think Croatia, and then cut through Austria, Germany, France, or whatever the geography is, to get back to England. And he's got to do it incognito, because he's a pretty valuable, a king without an army. People know he have a hefty ransom. It's interesting. And
I like the plot a lot.
I like the Vidal, even the young Vidal, he's got a good, just setting the scene. You start thinking about what Europe would have been like in those days. And, you know, they're wearing monk's robes. They got to kind of sneak through. It's very interesting. I'm liking it. Like, okay. I said, I'm probably going to, I don't have the time, but I'm going to finish it.
We
either way, but
may not pick this book, but I did nominate some Vidal a couple months ago. You as a big fan and me as never having read him, we gotta fix that this year. Uh-huh. So,
and I'm like, this is his younger, you can tell stylistically he would,
yeah, it looks like it, this was published in 1950. So it's an early,
he was 25, which is crazy.
That is very crazy.
He started out young and just kind of kept going, but I'm really liking it. I'll talk about it more when I finish. I suspect there's a lot more going on, you know, but.
All right. Yeah, but here's my next book. That does sound good. I think we're 2 for 2 here. This book, I don't think you're going to have much interest in, but if you're a fan of weather and history, this book is coming out, and I'm actually very excited to read this book. I don't know how I could tie it into the podcast, so this is probably going to be a book that I'm going to read on my own. It's called The Vortex, a true story of history's deadliest storm, an unspeakable war, and liberation by Scott Carney. I think there's a second author, but I didn't write it down. So what this is about, in November 1970, a cyclone called the Great Bola Cyclone is on course with what is now Bangladesh, but at the time, I think it's East Pakistan or something.
Something like that, yeah.
But this is the most deadly storm. The death toll figures kind of are hard to determine, but upwards of 500,000 people died from the cyclone.
Oh, wow.
And it's, hold on 1 second. It's that story plus kind of the geopolitical ramifications of the storm. The cyclone made landfall during a fragile time when Pakistan was on the brink of a historic election. The fallout ignited a violence, all this kind of stuff happens during this sort of monumental, like, catastrophe, like, cyclone. So I think it's kind of I hope it's going to be like an interesting look at a very, I've never heard of this story. I am a fan of weather. I know that's a weird thing to say. I like stories about, like, historical storms and that kind of stuff, hurricanes, blizzards, all that kind of stuff. I never heard about this. So I don't think you're interested in this stuff. If someone's listening out there, I don't know.
That's sort of an unfair assumption. That sounds halfway interesting.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I'm excited about it, and I don't know how to, like, say into words why I'm excited about it, but it's a huge storm, one of the deadliest storms on record, and then this, like, geopolitical tie-in to kind of flush out the backstory and about, you know, the people and the culture and how things change really from that point on. So,
and how a disaster that magnitude affects the people who go through it.
Exactly.
How it shakes up society, how, you know, how things look after.
There's no way that people cannot be changed from going through something that, where that many people either die or their lives are affected. So anyway, so that was my second book.
That's not bad.
Okay.
Not bad.
And that's coming out.
A lot of people think I don't like weather, but then when they get to know me, they're like, he kind of halfway likes the weather.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. All right. You ready? Next book.
Yeah.
We're going to go long tonight. I was telling you we're to go short because I injured my back, but we're going long tonight.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. What do we do?
You got to let things take their course, much like the weather.
What do we got?
Hey, so this was going to be one I was really going to push for us to read in March before Thrillergate happened.
Okay.
Now I think we might have to take a turn, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
But this one, because we don't read a lot of nonfiction, I was going to push for this because I think it'd be kind of cool and different. But maybe it's whatever. Hey, it's called Trickster Makes This World by Lewis Hyde.
Trickster?
Trickster. Like, you know, the fox, Loki, the old trickster gods. I started this a little bit ago, a year or two ago, and it really hooked me. And I proceeded not to pick it up again until just now. You know how that happens. But I like it. I like it. It's hard, in traditional, maybe indigenous societies, they have their myths, and those myths kind of reflect their way of being in the world, right? It informs how you act, why you act, what you do, their norms and traditions. And according to Lewis Hyde, a lot that the trickster's role in the logical universe is to kind of, in those types of societies, and you could argue in our society or in anyone's personal life, you want to avoid stagnation, just becoming kind of the same, never moving. You have to keep things going. You have to kind of re-examine your norms and traditions lest they become stagnant. And you start to kind of fall apart through lethargy, right? So the trickster's role in mythology is to kind of question certain things, to show the dichotomies through irony, through just blunt talk, through whatever else. That's like Coyote in the native myths. It's Loki. It's all those. That's the role the tricksters serve. And I gather through the subtitle, in fact, I only read like 30 pages. There's more to it. He talks about how artists' role in the modern world should be similar to the way tricksters' world, to kind of poke and prod at what we think is right and normal, to maybe kind of move us in a different direction, stuff like that.
I think it's an interesting topic. I think
it's good. I don't know if I did it justice, but
it's I'm kind of looking at it right now, and it looks pretty interesting.
I think it was a big deal, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago at this point, 10, 20 years ago. David Foster Wallace said Hyde is one of our true superstars in nonfiction.
He wrote The Gift? Is that correct, what I'm looking at here?
Oh, I don't know. That's not The Giver. It's different.
The other book he wrote looks more familiar to me.
Anyway, he wrote he's the author of The Gift. It's called Mischief, Myth, and Art.
I like it.
I think that would be a good, I don't know.
That sounds interesting.
Get to it at some point. If we don't wind up doing it, I might try to get the audiobook.
Good.
In my car.
All right. My next TBR show and tell is a book that's coming out soon. I'm not going to tell you the title because the title will give it away before I read the synopsis. In 1822, a secret family moves into a secret cabin some 30 miles northeast of Baltimore to farm, to hide, and to bear 10 children over the course of the next 16 years. The breadwinner, celebrated Shakespearean actor and master of the house in more ways than one, is at once mesmerizing talent and a man of terrifying instability. One by one, the children arrive as year by year, the country draws frighteningly close to the boiling point of succession and civil war.
Are they the Booth? It's the Booth family?
Yes. The title is Booth by Karen Joy Fowler.
Ooh.
And I think that sounds fantastic.
That sounds really good too. Yeah.
It is a portrait.
Is that their father?
That part of I kind of Junius Booth is the breadwinner. And then I think it goes more into John Wilkes Booth.
John Wilkes Booth was an actor, and his older brother, I think it was his older brother, was like the most famous actor of the era.
Really?
And John Wilkes Booth was an actor too, but it would be like if Luke Wilson or somebody like that.
Casey Affleck.
It'd be like Casey Affleck or Luke Wilson assassinated a politician nowadays.
I saw a review on Kirkus Reviews, like a starred review, which is like their highest kind of rating thing. So I have not read this author, but that sounds appealing to me. I want to read that book. And I thought you would like that kind of historical.
You're doing really well tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I don't know about my last two, but you know, there we go. All right, your third one, Matt.
Okay, so do you know how? So there's a theory out there.
Okay.
Cognitively, you know, where do you think consciousness springs from?
Animals. I don't know.
Yeah. So I guess there's a theory out there. Most people assume we kind of evolved with consciousness and we became more and more conscious as, you know, evolved from apes and all that stuff. There is a theory out there that consciousness came about in humans maybe 3,000 to 5,000 years ago. And in ancient times, where people thought they heard the voices of the gods and whatnot, that was really just the voices in their head that we kind of our consciousness that we kind of take for granted. We know that's our thoughts, our impulses, our urges. This guy, Julian James, is the first one to write it down in a theory. He wrote a book called The Origin of Consciousness in the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind. And the bicameral mind, I guess, is ancient people heard voices and they wrote it down like the gods speak to me and they believed it, but what it really was their own heads. He writes about in the Iliad, you know, it's almost like Achilles, all these other characters don't really have agency. They talk about how the gods are acting through them. And I guess in the Odyssey, Odysseus kind of has some personal agency, and the break is kind of from the Iliad, is the old ways. And then Odyssey is the new way. But origin of consciousness and the breakdown of the bicameral mind. I don't know that I agree with that, you know, but I think it'd be an interesting read, a good, interesting theory to kind of have under your belt.
Yeah.
And the people who did that, the show Westworld, I think also have read this book. It informs a lot of
a lot of people. It's a very well-respected book by some people. It's a controversial thesis, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's not something we would usually discuss, but I think, you know, something if we're grilling, drinking a couple brewskis, we would probably talk about this.
Maybe talk about,
And our significant others would walk inside and just be like, those guys
walk away. This is boring.
This is boring. These guys are, it's interesting.
What if? It'd be fun to kick around in your head.
Yeah, it is.
It's not true.
Because now I'm thinking about all the voices in my head. What are they?
Or what if you were 5,000 years ago, you think it's God talking to you, Zeus or whoever.
People to this day probably still think about that. Okay. Yeah. All right. You got us thinking, the listener and me. Okay. Whew. All right. Mine is not as in-depth. My next nomination, but this is another new book, it's a history book. And it's a look at a place during a time that I think is very interesting. The book is called We Don't Know Ourselves, A Personal History of Modern Ireland by Fintan O'Toole. And it looks at a time kind of around 1958, the Irish government or Ireland in general, a lot of the young people are leaving. It's just, things aren't looking bright for the future of Ireland. So they bring in all the sort of foreign investment. And this book looks at that time period and then like the after effects of that. And it looks the kind of, it sounds like the author is also self-reflecting on his time in Ireland. And sort of all the, I've always been kind of interested in by Ireland, just sort of, it's a complicated history. It's a rich history. And this is a new book looking at a specific kind of post-World War II Ireland. And it's getting some rave reviews. I saw a good article in The Guardian about it. And so I thought that was an interesting book coming out, history book. But
yeah,
it's not something I would really nominate for the podcast so much, but maybe that's going to be something I think I reserved this for the library. So when it does come out, if I have the time, I will give it my best shot to read. So that is called We Don't Know Ourselves by Fintan O'Toole.
Sounds moderately interesting.
There like you go.
Weather book. I could read that. It'd be.
I think I'm more excited for the weather book than this book, but both are interesting to me. So.
Okay.
All right. Your next head scratcher. Your next deep in the brains of Matt. What's he thinking? What's his next?
Brains plural.
Brains plurals. Multiple voices.
Yeah. But this might be the one if I was going to sneak off and do a heavy one.
Okay.
Like this might be the one I get to. I've been wanting to get to it for a while. So you know the term teleology?
No.
It's basically, I wish you knew it so I didn't have to explain it. No, the concept of maybe looking, projecting the way things are now into the past and assuming that the present was inevitable.
Okay.
Like, did we evolve eyes because we needed to see, or can we see because we have eyes? Teleology would be like, oh, we needed to see, so we have eyes. And that's a fallacy because maybe we can only see because we developed eyes. You know what I mean? It's like a weird thing. Like if you know, Carl Sagan's, his show, Cosmos or whatever it's called. Cosmos, Carl Sagan. He went through this whole thing about how the odds of us being here, like humans as a species, just the evolutionary turns from, you know, like a little mollusk from the ocean, turning into this reptile, turning into mammals, turning into all this stuff. The odds are so stacked against that, just the minuscule odds of us looking like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's kind of, is that concept?
Yeah.
Right. We kind of look back and say, oh, it's inevitable that we look like this because here we are and it happened. But it's kind of a mistake to think that way. And there are other ways things could have turned out that we miss because the present is as it is, right? That's basically the gist.
I think I understand it. I was doing a little reading while you were talking and I like
you understand it better than
I'm not very like stable, but I have a general idea of what this is. Yes.
Yeah. So take that concept and apply it to technology, right?
Yes.
We just assume people talk about technology very teleologically. These, you know, like, oh, technology allows us to do this. You know, they assume the technology we have is the ultimate technology.
Like they,
and so okay. maybe there are other technologies that exist. We just don't see them because over the centuries and the millennia, they've kind of been channeled into what we have now. And so take a step back and think about what technology is, who technology serves, kind of just that sort of, this book is kind of along those lines. Like take a step back about technology comes down to, it's basically what people or society want to do, want to accomplish.
I think I follow you
vaguely.
Yeah,
you know. And so just take a step back and look at it historically and think about what it is technology is, what it is we want to accomplish as a society, what other kind of technology could look like. All that sort of stuff is encompassed in this book by Lewis Mumford. I've heard people call him Louis Mumford, but it's spelled Lewis, so I'm gonna say Lewis. It's called Technics and Civilization, Lewis Mumford.
Okay.
He, this was kind of his thing. The mumbo jumbo I just talked about, that was his. He wrote 5 to 10 books basically about what he called them technics, but technology, kind of machines, the origin of machines, just basically that sort of stuff. And for whatever reason, I'm kind of geeky about that right now.
Yeah, you really like using your brain to think about, which I like. I like that because I'm now thinking about this stuff. Mm-hmm. Your last two selections or TBR are very interesting. And I don't know if my brain's smart enough to actually fully grasp them.
We'll see. I'll either make you read this or if I'll sneak up and do it on my own.
Okay.
But we'll have to do a whole show about it. And you just have to sit there and listen to me.
Okay. I will. I will. Yeah. I will agree to that. Here's my last dumb nomination that doesn't, you know, I don't have any fancy terms or anything, but I think this is an interesting book. And this is a author I've been meaning to read for some time. And this is their new book. It is called Civilizations, and it's by Laurent Binet, French author. I don't know if I pronounced that at all. And let me just, I can't really explain, but let me just read you this, what it's about.
Okay.
A woman warrior and leader of a band of Viking explorers setting out to the south. They meet local tribes, exchange skills, or are taken prisoner, and get as far as Panama, but nobody ultimately knows what became of them. Fast forward 500 years to 1492, and we're reading the journals of Christopher Columbus, mid-Atlantic on his way to on his own famous voyage of exploration to the Americas, dreaming of gold and conquest. But he and his men are taken captive by the Incas. Even as they are suffering increases, his faith in his superiority and his mission is unshaken. 30 years later, the last Incan emperor, these characters all have names, I can't pronounce them, so if I'm leaving their names out, that's why. The last Incan emperor arrives in Europe in the ship stolen from Columbus. He finds a continent divided by religious and dynastic quarrels, the Spanish Inquisition, so on and so on. But most of all, he finds downtrodden populations ready for revolution. Fortunately, he has a recent bestseller as a guidebook of acquiring power, The Prince. The stage is set for Europe to be ruled by the Incas and Aztecs for a great war that will change history forever. This is Laurent Binet's Civilizations is nothing less than a strangely believable counterfactual history of the modern world.
Yeah.
It's a tongue twister.
Peter, if this was the nomination episode, I'd vote for that. Like that's great. I love this alternate history.
Thought you would like, I actually have this book just checked out from the library.
Yeah.
I had had it on hold for months, and it wasn't like I was like number 10 out of, yeah. For some reason, it took them forever to get this book, but I finally got it.
Civilization? I'm going to see if I can find, like, that sounds great. I like.
Doesn't that sound really interesting?
Yeah. I like stuff like
you
like,
love alternative.
Alternative history. It's, yeah. Harry Turtledove does it. There's some other people. Yeah. That's, yeah. Civilizations?
Civilizations
by Binet.
He wrote a book called HHHH. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Four H's.
And that was about the events leading up to the assassination of a Nazi leader, Reinhard Heydrich, in Prague during World War II. And that was his first book. I think he wrote another book in this. I believe this is his third book that's been translated into English. So, and I saw a review on The Wall Street Journal that gave it like a rave review. Yeah. That got on my radar. And then when I was reading it, I was like, this sounds right up Matt's alley. So
sounds great. I'm going to see if I can track. I'll see how much it is on Amazon. And I'll see. They have it on audio, the library. Sometimes that can be a shortcut if there's a long line for the actual book.
I don't.
It might not be recorded in English, actually.
That's, yeah, that might be the problem is.
I'll check into it. We'll see.
I'm happy that you're this interested in this book. That
sounds great. Yeah,
there you go. That's my last TBR show and tell book.
Cool.
You have one more.
Yeah. Hey, this one's fun too.
Okay.
It's older, you know the author, but it's nonfiction, and it might surprise you that
okay.
So I'll just, this is a quote. If Jesus Christ were amongst them, they would deceive him. It was said of the border reavers, the rustlers, the outlaws, and gangsters who terrorized the Anglo-Scottish frontier of 400 years ago. Theirs is an almost forgotten chapter of British history, preserved largely in folk tales and ballads. It is the story of the great raiding families, Armstrong, Elliots, Grahams, Johnstons, Maxwells, Scots, Kerrs, Nixons, and others, of the outlaw bands and broken men, the hot-trod pursuits, and the great battles of English and Scottish armies across the marshes.
I'm intrigued.
True story, reads like fiction. By George MacDonald Fraser.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our old friend.
Kind of try to put together a history of, like a scholarly history of a chaotic time.
What's the book called? Some
of the blurbs here talk about how it's an interesting time, but it's really hard to historically put it down because it's oral tradition and, you know, but apparently he did. It sounds really cool. I like stuff like that. Like,
what's the book called?
The Steel Bonnets.
The Steel Bonnets.
Because you think of bonnets and you're like, oh, you know, farm girls wearing bonnets. These are steel and Scottish.
Elliot, yeah, I like it.
Steel Bonnets by George MacDonald Fraser. That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
I think this has been a success.
Yeah.
And the first time we've done like a TBR. I think we might have done sort of a similar thing early on, but I think we should bring this back. This has been fun.
We just talked about 10 books we're probably not going to read anytime soon.
But it's also...
No, it
goes back to what I talked about earlier. And hopefully we don't do this, but like, on, you know, you're on Netflix and you're like, I want to watch that movie. Let me add it to my queue. Let me add this. And you always... My QBR is always... going longer than what I can actually read. But along the way, you find books, you're like, you know, that's interesting. That author's interesting. No, that concept is, oh, that historical thing is interesting. So if we have just given you some books to add to your nightstand, we've accomplished our goal.
That's the point of all
this. That's the point we're trying to do. All right, man. It's been a fun episode.
I think it's good.
Been we'll good.
Public, thanks. We'll see what Eminem thinks. Hopefully this doesn't get back to him. We'll see.
So what we're reading for the podcast right now, we just told you a lot of books that we might not get to, but what we are doing for the podcast, our February book is The Game of Kings by Dorothy Dunnett, a historical... it's called like a historical romance. I don't know if I would quantify it that. It's more political in nature than like romance, I would say. That's our February book. We also have Sometimes a Great Notion, which is our seasonal book by Ken Kesey. We're both making good progress on that. We have Black Leopard, Red Wolf by Marlon James. This is sort of our newest addition to our seasonal book. That kind of replaces The Red and the Black, which we posted an episode on not too long ago. And then our yearly book for 2022 is the great and long classic Life and Fate by Vasily Grossman. We just did an episode, we kind of referenced it earlier, on our Patreon account for Paper Lion. So that if you curious about that and supporting us over there on our Patreon account, you can listen to that episode. Upcoming, we're going to probably look at some baseball books over there on the Patreon and do some episodes about baseball writing and such. Baseball might not have a season this year, but we'll still read some baseball books.
Well, I was going to say, if they don't have a season, we'll shift to labor relations, labor history. So either way.
Let's see here. If you can get in contact with us in all the usual social media, I'm curious for the listener, if you have if you do the same thing that we did tonight and added books to our TBR, what are some of your recent additions to your TBR that you might not get to but you are excited about? I think it's a fun game to do with your bookish friends. So Matt, any last words? Wisdom for the listener and reader out there in the world.
Oh, nothing too big. Just Eminem, if you're listening. I compared you to Hemingway. Don't be too offended. Just, I don't think you have a sense of humor by yourself.
Talk to you soon.